The next case is 97-1244 and 1255, State of Ohio v. Gary Keemer. Mr. Skelton.
Mr. Chief Justice, for the members of the Justice Court, I represent the appellant, Mr. Gary Keemer, in the manner now before this honorable court. The facts of this case are fairly straightforward. On a cold winter night, two officers were patrolling a housing project in Cleveland, Ohio, when they discovered that a basement door had been broken into. Immediately upon entering the door, they saw the appellant rise from a crouching position and drop a car antenna as he did so. The car antenna was tested and was discovered to contain a trace amount of unweighable burnt residue that was positive for cocaine. The appellant now urges this court to reverse his conviction based on two propositions of law. The first being that under the pursuant to Ohio rules of statutory construction, the possession of an unweighable amount of unusable cocaine residue does not constitute a violation of the drug use statute. Now, the law in Cuyahoga County now is that one can be convicted of possessing any amount of controlled substance. Hence, I stand before you today guilty of the drug use statute simply because of the money that I have in my wallet. Now, recent studies have conclusively proven that all paper currency in the United States contains contaminated trace amounts of cocaine. Therefore, under the rule of law in Cuyahoga, I am guilty of the offense that my client was convicted of. But further, I'm even more culpable than he was because under the facts here, I certainly know that the money in my wallet contains cocaine. Whereas that cannot be said without some doubt in his case. Now, a minority of other states have held that a less amount of controlled substance is capable of either use or distribution, it simply doesn't constitute a controlled substance within the meaning of a comparable drug use statute. The federal courts impose a similar rule, but they impose a measurable amount standard. Now, under either standard, the appellant's conviction would be reversed because here the substance couldn't be weighed, and secondly, it certainly couldn't have been used or distributed. Now, the language in Ohio drug use statute is patterned after the model federal statute. That language prohibits the possession of, in quotes, a controlled substance. Now, the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia found that this language is ambiguous as to whether it's meant to reach trace amounts of controlled substance. They found that the plain language of the statute and the legislative history behind its enactment did not clarify the matter whatsoever. Now, in the case of an ambiguous statute, Section 1.49 of the revised code directs courts to look to, among other things, the objective to be obtained by the statute and the consequences of construction thereof. Here, the objective of the drug use statute most surely is to prevent the use and distribution of cocaine. Mere possession in by itself is actually harmless. One of the federal courts characterized possession as a penalized state of preparation. When we look to the consequences of the construction followed in Cuyahoga County, we see that the appellant sentence of he got a minimum of 2 to 10 years, the cost of taxpayers of Ohio, well, it's cost so far $32,000, and it can cost as much as nearly $170,000. The appellant contends that his sentence has been disproportionate both to himself and to taxpayers of Ohio. Further support of that, I believe that the recent sentencing revision under SB 2 underscores this contention. Enabling legislation which established the Ohio Criminal Sentencing Commission directed the commission to address two problems. One, prison overcrowding and conservation of correction department resources, and secondly, to assure proportionality and uniformity in sentencing. This shows two things. First of all, that it was enacted to correct disproportionate sentences such as one in the case of Barr. And secondly, it also shows because SB 2 reduced sentences and penalties for lower level drug offenses, they did this because because of overcrowding and because of the problem of financial resources. And it's known to attention that census subjects is counterproductive because it's actually compelled the legislature to lower penalties for substantial amounts. In other words, he should have been sentenced to 30, a maximum of 30 days of paramedic. Instead, he got a 2 to 10 year sentence. That's taking a prison space and for the expense to the state. And in reaction to that sort of situation, the legislature actually reduced sentences for possessing substantial amounts. Finally, Section 2901.4 of the revised code directs courts to construe statutes strictly against the state and liberally in favor of the accused. Now, the paraphernalia statute here directs courts to consider the presence of residue on objects in determining whether that object constitutes paraphernalia. So in this case, we have a possibility of prosecution under either code section on identical evidence. A trace amount could provide evidence that an otherwise legal object is paraphernalia, or it could allow the Cuyahoga County prosecution for drug abuse. Allowing a conviction for either offense on identical evidence ignores the statutory distinction made by the legislature. If briefly, the prosecutor states that the only reason for possessing a crack pipe is to smoke cocaine. This is probably true. Presumably, the legislature knew this when it denominated that offense as punishable by death, which means punishable by 30 days. These foregoing considerations show that the legislature never intended the drug abuse statute to reach cases involving unavailable amounts of cocaine residue. Now, in the second proposition of law, the appellant argues that the mere possession of trace amounts in and by itself is insufficient to establish that the substance was knowingly possessed. The Supreme Court of Texas, in so holding, stated, I may quote, that it's a harsh rule indeed that would charge an appellant with knowingly possessing that which required a microscope to identify. Now, in Ohio, this court has taken a similar tack in State v. Dempsey and State v. Brandt. In those cases, the defendants were found with minute placed marijuana in their possession. This court, in that case, rejected the statutory presumption at that time that the jury could find intent based upon mere possession of the substance. In so doing, it held that the presumption would be valid, if there was a rational connection between the proven fact of possession and then the presumed fact of knowing possessions. It went on to hold that in that case, with a minuscule amount, that there's an insufficient rational connection between those two factors.
Can't we look at how the circumstances to determine the only thing? We don't just look at the actual item itself, we look at the circumstances of hearing that a guy looked like he was trying to hide in the basement, and he had a crack pipe in his hand, dropped it to the police come.
Facts is just plausible that he went into the basement for shelter. The officer testified it's common for homeless people such as himself to do just that. And then he picked up a pipe leak, the antenna that he found on the floor. I'm saying this is plausible because there's no other evidence of recent usage, ownership of the pipe. He was not tested in the presence of cocaine in his urine. The officers did testify that he appeared intoxicated. Now, and even in minority non-jurisdictions, courts there have sustained convictions where there is other substantial evidence that goes towards knowing possession. For instance, in Texas, there's a case where a man was found walking down the street, obviously intoxicated, in his possession there was a glass pipe with visible cocaine residue. Court there, even though it affirms the rule, goes by the rule urged today, affirms the conviction there, finding that this constitutes sufficient evidence of knowing possession, still adhere to the rule in the absence of any other evidence besides mere possession of the pipe, simply insufficient evidence that the pipe is knowing possession.
Is Pelham a majority rule or a minority rule? Pelham, the Texas case.
It's minority rule. Now, in many of the minority amount jurisdictions, they conflate the two justifications for the minority amount rule. Only four states hold that as a matter of statutory construction, a minimal usable amount is required. However, many more states follow the rule that in order to find that possession of trace amount is knowingly made, that more is required than mere possession. So the substantial minority of states follow that rule. Now, in Ohio, there are really only two jurisdictions that have explicitly ruled that they are any amount of jurisdictions. That would be Franklin County and Iowa.
The majority of states follow the any amount rule.
Well, either follow the any amount rule or have ruled on it.
Okay.
Now, as in Ohio, it appears in many jurisdictions, this issue never reaches a level of appellate review because it's not a common practice to prosecute such cases under the drug review statute. As far as I can determine, only maybe six or seven jurisdictions in this state even have cases involving crack stems and where minuscule amounts have been done. Firm convictions of such minuscule amounts. However, only four have really affirmed on the grounds urged by the prosecution here today. So it includes the Sixth District, which approved and followed the decisions of Daniels and Newsom, and the Third District in Chapman and Reese and State versus Dick, again, approved and followed the decisions of Newsom.
You accept and agree, do you not, that your client is guilty of possession of drug paraphernalia?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, and he wasn't indicted for that?
No, he was not. If I may, I deserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. I'm sorry,
thank you, Mr. Kelly. Mr. Mahoney.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. I'm a misdemeanor for drug paraphernalia.
Are passing by a basement of one of the CMHA states in Cuyahoga County. They hear voices in a basement, knowing that no one is supposed to be in the basement, knowing that it is past the hour because the maintenance personnel are working. They seek to investigate. They see that the door to the basement is compromised and tampered with. They enter. They see the defendant standing up. If someone is crouching down, they obviously are standing up. And assuming a standing position, they observe them drop a metal crack pipe, which later they testified was a car antenna. It is the metal portion of a car radio that is broken off and then used by crack addicts to ingest crack cocaine. That is later submitted for testing, and the testing procedures, due to a mechanical limitation beyond 0.01 1/100 of a gram, there is no weight for this particular residue. But nonetheless, the lab technician testified that he could see and scraped out the residue, and then he tested through scientific testing and proved positive for crack cocaine. I would ask this court to reject appellant's position because it's clearly the minority view. Only four of the states that have considered the issue have sided with appellant, and more importantly, existing Ohio law is consistent with Cuyahoga County. Beginning back in 1985, State versus Daniels, the Hamilton County First District Court of Appeals clearly rejected the minimal use doctrine. There's no question about it. Hands down, they said that the General Assembly stated a controlled substance. There is no weight in the statute. Following that 1990, the Cuyahoga County Court of Appeals and State v. Newsom followed Daniels and again reiterated the simple proposition that revised code 292511 is not ambiguous, as the appellant would have this court believe.
Yeah, counsel, what is it this guy had?
What did he have? He had a crack pipe, a charge of pen that he had broken out in some
way.
He used it to smoke his crack.
He did?
Sure.
What evidence is there?
That's what it is.
The evidence, Mr. Justice, would be that the pipe that's positive for crack cocaine residue, he's in an unlawful area at an unlawful time with other people separate and secreting themselves in the basement. The basement had been entered illegally, and upon observing law enforcement, he drops the item. He drops the item because he knows what it has. He knows it has crack cocaine residue, and he knows in Cuyahoga County and other jurisdictions of Ohio, he's going to get charged with drug abuse.
Boy, this is a really sophisticated, is that homeless person?
I'm not aware that he was homeless or not. I believe he was. I tried the case, and I believe he was homeless.
Why tonight?
But you just said he had used the pipe to ingest cocaine.
Circumstantially, the inference may be made by a fact finder. The only reason for having a crack pipe is it's a car antenna. I mean, people don't carry around car antennas that are broken off and then contain cocaine residues.
So the reason to have it is to smoke crack.
Yes, and I go one step further. The only reason to have it would be to smoke crack.
But you have no evidence that he actually ever did that.
I would respectfully disagree from the position that it tests positive for residue. At some point in time, that pipe was used to smoke crack cocaine. He is in possession of that pipe. Him dropping the pipe immediately upon seeing law enforcement allows a permissible inference that he knew that that was his pipe and he knew that it was going to be tested later on by a lab technician and he could be charged.
But that's the problem with your case, isn't it? An awful lot of suppositions in the statement you just made. Doesn't the evidence in this case more likely than not fit drug paraphernalia? What other circumstances were involved why this person was charged with a felony and not a misdemeanor? What is in his background? I haven't heard anything yet that you've said that would justify an indictment to a felony for someone. You yourself said that no one can prove he smoked. I don't know why you call it a pipe. It's an antenna. Does it look like a pipe? Can you buy it in the store as a pipe? What makes you emphasize that it's a drug pipe? I don't understand it. It's an antenna. Now, a man sees another man drop an antenna. You yourself said there's no evidence that he ever used the antenna to smoke anything. He dropped it. Now, what is so egregious in the facts that you've given us that makes a felony more worthy than a misdemeanor?
The short answer to that, Your Honor, is revised code 2925.11. You may not knowingly obtain, possess, or use a controlled substance. That statute does not contain any amount, not weight or any other amount. And based on that statute, I would ask that this court follow the line of cases that are published and reported and unreported. They begin with a simple premise. What is the definition of knowledge? A person has knowledge regardless of his purpose if he is aware that his conduct would probably cause a certain result or probably be of a certain nature.
So you are assuming that because he dropped the pipe when someone came into the basement, that he knowingly had, that he had possession of the knowledge that this thing he had in his hand, he's got to get rid of it because he just smoked some crack cocaine with it. Is that it?
No, what I'm indicating is there's a whole litany of factors that go into deciding knowledge, and it's just as Brandon had pointed out, it's a totality of the circumstances. One factor is that it tested positive for cocaine residue.
Well, what were the circumstances in the basement that makes this so strong that he was smoking crack? Give us the evidence that was presented by the officers that went down there that would reliably show that there was an aroma of whatever it was. The whole group were doing things with other... what is it that you're so sure is being used to smoke down in the basement?
Consistent.
Was it hot? Did he pick it up? Was it hot?
No. No, there's no testimony that it was warm to the touch.
What would that mean?
That is just one factor that a reviewing court and a jury could consider. In response to your question, again, these are individuals who broke into a CMHA basement at an unauthorized time in an unauthorized area. The suggestion and the permissible inference and a fact finder could reasonably find this is that his cronies were off in a separate part of the basement.
I assume all the other... I assume all the other people in the basement were charged also with this crime.
They were all checked. A few of them had warrants. I believe two female had warrants. There was no actual rock of crack cocaine found, but that's easily explainable because the officers are detaining Mr. Teamer and confiscating the metal pipe, the crack pipe.
So they had no evidence on the other people in the basement that they did anything. And the only reason he was charged is he happened to drop an antenna.
Well, no one else had anything other than a warrant to justify their arrest.
Mr. Mahoney, are we here on the sufficiency of the evidence proposition of law?
Not necessarily.
The dialogue that has been going on is, to me, relates to sufficiency of the evidence. And from the proposition of law that appears in your brief, quantity of a controlled substance is not a factor in determining whether a defendant may lawfully be convicted of possession of that substance. And I personally would like to hear you address that issue.
Certainly.
Rather than sufficiency.
The line of cases that I have reviewed start with a simple proposition from the now seminal case of State versus Jenks. A reviewing court will not reverse so long as there is sufficient evidence, and I'm certain that all of the members of the bench are familiar with Jenks. The next proposition is straightforward and simple. Quantity goes to knowledge. Knowledge is determined from all of the factors. Everything that I've indicated from the breaking into the CMHA basement and the fact that the crack pipe tested positive for residue goes to knowledge. So long as there is sufficient evidence of knowledge, this court should, under the holding in Jenks, the definition of knowledge in the fact of a particular case, adopt consistent with the analysis from Newsom and Lynch and Daniels that weight goes to knowledge and knowledge is determined from all of the attendant facts and circumstances. So long as the reviewing court is satisfied that the Jenks standard has been met, the case should be affirmed.
Well, let's test that knowledge issue. This gentleman is holding, they speak out of a car antenna that in this world could be used as a crank pump. He is used as a crank pump. He approaches others who live in the trail and say, well, if he lives in, I'm offering that up for barter or in cash. What do you think, Mark is doing? What do you think he thinks he has to sell? What do you think a willing customer who travels in the same world thinks they have to buy upon an inspection of this?
Based on my experience, Mr. Joseph Piper, crack pipes are either a dime or a dozen or they're completely invaluable to the person who wants to use them.
That's what he's got. He's got a crack pipe.
Right.
Nobody's going to exchange anything of value or barter anything of value for crack or the cocaine itself, because he doesn't think he's offering it up, and they don't think there's anything there to be purchased.
I understand. Hypothetically, however, you...
I mean, isn't that the knowledge that he has? I mean, he knows that's what he's got. He's got a crack pipe.
But aren't we here to determine whether if when such an item is tested, is only arrested, can a person be convicted of that? That's putting aside the other issues of knowledge. Do we have to have a given amount of these four minority states that hold this, that you must have a certain amount of the substance in order to obtain a conviction? Isn't that what we're really talking about? Is a residue, as it was in this case, sufficient to proceed?
Absolutely. There is no weight. You have to begin with what the person is charged with. 29-25-11, there is no weight.
And that's what we're here to do. Just read 29-25-11, and if it fits, you apply it.
Absolutely. And if this court is to adopt a minimal use standard, I would suggest what you're doing is you're just rewriting the statute. You're just indicating...
Let me see if I can... I hear all this talk about use, and I don't see the statute requiring use. It requires possession. I thought your argument is that the fact that this trace amount of cocaine was found in a device that is typically used to ingest cocaine, that suggests that he knowingly possessed cocaine. If it had been on a $5 bill that they found in his wallet and they found a trace amount, that'd be something different. But I thought the argument was not that he used it, but that he possessed it in a device that is typically used by people who know they have cocaine. Isn't that the argument?
That's the argument, absolutely.
So then we go to the question. Then we go to the question of whether this trace amount is covered by the statute, whether we want to adopt the majority view.
The first question is, did he possess crack cocaine? The answer has to be yes, because the test came back positive for cocaine, and there's no amount in 29-25-11. The other argument that is sometimes advanced is that what we have by way of a crack pipe, you have circumstantial evidence that he used the pipe at some point in time. And I understand that it's circumstantial evidence, but that is for a jury to weigh and decide. And they're confronted with two consistent theories. He possessed crack cocaine, it has positive for residue, end of story, that's in Vice Code 29-25-11. Another theory, ladies and gentlemen, of the jury would be that at some point in time, because this is his pipe and his possession, he used the crack cocaine. Moreover, he's in a basement that he broke into that is unlawful and illegal, and he's with a group of other people, and he's crouching down, and as soon as the law enforcement officers enter, he drops the pipe.
Would it change your opinion if he'd held the pipe and didn't drop it?
I don't know that it would matter.
But wait a minute, now you're using that fact almost alone to show knowledge on his part that he had something illegal in his hand. And I ask you this, that if he didn't drop it and held it, would he be charged with the same offense?
Absolutely he would, because the crack pipe test is positive for cocaine. It's a possession offense. What I'm indicating...
But you couldn't argue then that he dropped it. Obviously, he knew that he had something illegal. You couldn't use
You're absolutely right.
Right? What would you use then?
All of the other attendant facts and circumstances, that he's in a basement at an unlawful hour, that he broke into the basement, that he's with a group of other people. My argument is that he dropped the pipe is an argument as to his consciousness of guilt. He holds on to the pipe. I don't have that argument, I recognize that. But I'm dealing with the facts as they are, and as experienced justices that you are, you've all at some point in time confronted these crack pipe cases from your prior experiences. These people drop them, and they drop them like hot potatoes. It happens all the time, whether it's a plastic bag or a tissue paper with two rocks rolled up, or a carbon antenna, or a glass or ceramic tube. They don't want to get caught with them, and that provides the prosecution with an argument that, hey, their consciousness and their guilt, when we argue the jury. I would conclude by indicating that I had submitted a list of additional authorities. I do that to show how the treatment by the different appellate districts treat these things. In regard to the argument that Senate Bill 2 somehow requires this court to consider the issue. Senate Bill 2 changed the law unquestionably, but that doesn't mean that this court should consider policies such as people in prison and how many people we have in prison. I see that my time is up. I ask the court to affirm the Court of Appeals and adopt it.
Thank you, Mr. Mahoney. Mr. Kelly, you've saved about 2 minutes of your time.
Thanks, Court again. Since we're looking at the totality of the circumstances, just a few factual matters that should draw the court's attention. Police officers testified that it was common to find crack pipes in basements in this housing process. Prosecutors stated these tanks are thrown away and dropped all the time. The testimony of the officers seemed to paint a picture where this basement was just commonly littered with these sort of things. So whether he actually owned the pipe really never established. And while that's certainly possible, it's possible that he could have smoked the pipe earlier. There's no evidence tending to show those facts other than his mere possession of the pipe. Now, police officers also testified that they couldn't tell if there was residue inside the cocaine, inside the antenna. And once that it was just a reasonable guess that it would be. Okay, so first of all, there's no evidence tending to show that the appellant knew that there was residue in the pipe. But beyond that, it doesn't seem reasonable to infer that even if he knew there was residue there, that he knew that residue would contain a microscopic amount of crack cocaine. Now, while this information may be common knowledge to police officers, crack users do not commonly sell and use residue. So it's unreasonable to infer, just because he had residue that was not visible, that he knew that he was in possession of cocaine.
But for this case, do we even have to ever get to that issue? Because it's a certified conflict case to us,
right.
And they made it very clear, the certifying court did, that accordingly, the only issue we certify to the Supreme Court is whether the amount is a factor in determining the crime of drug abuse.
That's correct.
That's all that there is. Not any knowledge, not any way, not whether a crack pipe is an antenna or vice versa. It's whether or not the amount. Isn't that what we're to decide?
That is the issue stated by the court below. They limited the issue to that narrow frame. I would urge this court to look beyond it. I think there's much more involved here. Addressing that issue, I think, specifically shows that the overall position here is a common sense issue to be taken. Now, even the court in Chapman and State versus Day of the Third Circuit, which enforces the any amount rule, recognize that the amount of cocaine is a factor to be considered in terms of knowing possession. Now, this is true in both large and small quantities of cocaine. For instance, in Chapman, the amount involved was over 200 grams hidden in the car. In that case, there were a number of occupants in the car. In affirming the conviction, the court said, well, the jury can presume from the large quantity involved here. Now, presume, but can infer knowledge of possession.
You've used your time, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.